everyone, we're Asteroids in Exile. Welcome to Season 2, the first episode for 2017, us kicking off our podcast about general geekery from an outsider's point of view. My name is Niv.
And I'm Martin. And I welcome you as well.
And we're
Asteroids in Exile. Yeah.
Right, we're back. Cool. So, we're back for Season 2. So, I guess some general things is just around us wanting to do a full season two, another at least 10 episodes, right?
Yeah.
With all the big moving and shaking happening in 2017 in the movie, comic, and pop culture world. So we're looking forward to expressing our thoughts and judgments on everything that goes on.
Especially our judgments.
Especially our judgments. We're a very judgy crew up here. So what we wanted to do for this first episode was just sort of talk about at the high level some of the things that happened over the last couple of weeks since we've been away. So we've had Rogue One come out, a whole bunch of new comic trailers, comic book movie trailers come out, and some the movie news about what's happening this year and what we are looking forward to, what we're not looking forward to.
What we'll boycott,
yeah. And general stuff. So let's start with Rogue One. So that was the biggest release in the last couple months. So it's still trending. It's still like in the top 10 movies after 6 weeks or so.
Isn't it amazing to think so that, nobody will bother trying to beat a Star Wars movie for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, Star Wars is pretty much going to own December, I think, when it comes to the box office and release schedules. And you're seeing that a lot of movies already, like a lot of studios are just staying away from not releasing anything in December. I hope that they do put up something. I mean, it'll be cool if there was another brand, like another series to challenge Star Wars, you know, to see if they can dethrone it. Because the thing is, Disney's going to own it forever now, right? And they could just keep that story going forever and ever and ever.
And they will acquire another franchise that can beat Star Wars.
Maybe they'll start putting up Indiana Jones against Star Wars. You know, it's just be a Disney versus Disney match or something. I don't know.
It would be great.
But I hope that that there can be some competition, because that will help keep Star Wars on its toes. You know,
yeah.
They won't become complacent about boring stories and, you know, just trying to fill the gap and go through the motions. So what did you think of Rogue One?
It's a very brave movie, but given its nature as being derived from just a line in the opening crawl.
Yeah.
And it looks beautiful and it's beautifully designed and it sounds beautiful, but I didn't think much of the movie itself.
Really?
I think it was rather convoluted, too big for its own, to carry its own weight in some way. Let's look or let's see how the Star Wars story format will be developed over the coming years. But, you know, for me, it wasn't a good start into the standalone movie franchise.
Which is interesting. I mean, I quite enjoyed it. I thought as a standalone movie, I wasn't expecting much from it. I wasn't expecting the normal Star Wars things. What I wanted to see was, what does the rest of the Star Wars universe look like outside of Jedis and Skywalkers? And that's effectively what Rogue One was, you know. A lot of people that I spoke to actually disliked it for that very same reason. I mean, I was in an Uber with the driver was a massive Star Wars fan, and I knew that because his phone rang and it was the Darth Vader theme when his phone rang in the car. So I asked him, I said, you know, are you a Star Wars fan? He was like, yeah, you know, I really love it. And I asked him if he was going to go watch Rogue One, and he goes, not interested. There's no Skywalkers. To me, Star Wars is about the Skywalker storyline, you know, so he wasn't interested in Rogue One at all because it didn't have to connect to that. So it feels like there's a whole contingent of even Star Wars fans who just are tuned out of the Star Wars storyline of movies, you know. So it's an interesting one.
That's sad to hear, because I think even if you think that Star Wars is unshakably entwined with the Skywalker story, like you said, I think the story movies are a good way to explore the further Star Wars universe and explore further ideas. And this could have been a great movie, but it was. It tried to harken back to the Skywalker saga tropes, in some way.
Like what kind of tropes?
The whole family business, family affairs, sins of the father gets passed down to the children and stuff. And I think we talked about it in our preparation talk that. They incorporated things that, or so many things that you just don't know, like Saw Gerrera, which you don't know if you haven't watched Clone Wars, and you know then he gets built up to play a not a pivotal role but an important role, and gets brushed away with the dust.
Yeah, actually, no, that was a fair point. I thought the first. Half or the first two thirds of the movie are a little bit weak, especially because they put Saul Guerrero in there and it's like, he didn't do anything. Like, it was pointless. Why have a character that really amounts to nothing in the end? Like, it was cool to look at and see Forrest Whitaker in that role, but at the same time, wholly unneeded, I think, and they could have done without it. So, I mean, structurally, there were issues. The characters were quite interesting, but I felt like there were just too many characters sometimes. They could have combined some, you know, two characters into one and like had less screen time, but had more of a story associated with that character.
Yeah, easily.
So, but I enjoyed just the last bit, I think, really woke me up. It started to drag in the middle for me a little bit in terms of like just the weight of the story, like you said. But the last action sequence, getting everyone to do what they needed to do to get the message out and get those plans onto the ship, I really enjoyed that.
That was well made. The action sequence was done. It was well made.
You can tell. I mean, it was one of those situations with the movie where they just filmed a whole lot and then put the movie together in the editing room.
Yeah.
Because you know, everyone's. Everyone's saying that there's just so many shots from the trailers that didn't make it into the movie. And it's like, I think they kind of re-edited it to kind of be not about the central character, Jen Erso, and more about the team.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of where those structural issues came from.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and there are those nitpicky things like the data query center. You know, the setup that they have these columns with the hard disks or the storage medias in the middle.
Oh,
and then you look onto it from one side and you can't control the robot when you need data, a hard disk from the other side. You're screwed.
Yeah. I was thinking about this as I was watching Star Wars Rebels as well. Like, there's a lot of stuff in Star Wars. It's just about looking good.
Yeah.
You know, like, it looks like a really awesome thing, but the practicalities of it would just be stupid. Like you said, like, you can't see the back of the data bank.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe you have to rotate the thing, but I don't know, like, they didn't show us that.
But then I defended the satellite dish calibration controls being on this small walkway that sticks out of the tower, because I said, yeah, well, how can you calibrate the satellite dish if you can't see it?
Well, I guess so. I mean,
because that bothered a coworker of mine.
Yeah. I don't know. But look, I, at this stage, Star Wars has its own reality, its own physics, and its own sense of design and practicality. You know? So they don't generally design things to be the most practical and efficient. Like the satellite dish and the data bank operations. But I still think it's a great movie if you just want to watch a really good adventure story. And what I also liked about it was that kind of the story ended, like with those characters, which they could have done a better job to kind of draw out the characters and, you know, to tell us about the characters,
yeah,
and make us care more about the characters. But it's a great movie to just kind of get some sort of like a full story. Like you see the end, you know, as opposed to a lot of movies and stuff these days where it's all about the next sequel and, you know, the next movie in that series. This one kind of closes off the story so you can get a sense of completion, a sense of closure.
Yeah. And it's,
and at the same time, catapult yourself into episode 4.
Catapult yourself is the best way to describe it, yeah. On running away from a certain master of the dark arts.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We're trying not to do too many spoilers, right? Yeah. So, it was cool. I think, overall, I thought it was pretty solid, despite the fact that it was, hacked together, and had some structural issues, but you know, you can't have everything, I guess.
No.
let's hope they can do better with episode 8 and the Han Solo movie.
So, yeah. And hopefully they reveal something like, you know, Tarkin's journal. And at one time he writes in, Stardate 7447. I've been really hard on director Krennic, and perhaps it was a bad move to take away the Death Star from him. I'm sad that he's dead, but I'll send his mother flowers as an apology. Because Tarkin really was an asshole in that movie, and it just didn't fit into the character that we experienced him until now.
In episode four.
Yeah, okay. You know, I've read the Tarkin novel and how he behaves in Rebels, and you know, his almost childish, petty behavior in Rogue One.
Yeah,
it did not sit well with me. You know, he could have overtaken Rebels, the thing after Krennic died.
Rebels happens before Rogue One, right?
Yeah, but have you, there's a General Syndulla is called out in the Rebel base at some point in Rogue One, but it's not clear if it's Hera or her father. And you see a Chopper driving through the Rebel base when they gear up for the final confrontation on the beach planet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it lines up there.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I haven't seen that yet because I'm only halfway through Rebels, so I guess that's still coming.
No, it's in Rogue One. You have those references in Rogue One.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. So hold on. So Hera is potentially mentioned in Rogue One.
Yeah, Hera or her father. Chopper's actually in the frame. He drives through the frame at one point.
Is it Chopper with the orange?
Yep.
Or Chopper painted to look like a... Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. Well, that would be cool. I mean, I would love to eventually see a live-action Ezra and a live-action Kanan. That would be
great,
cool.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, and I'm...
Freddie Prinze almost... Jr. should play Kanan.
What?
In
Freddie
Prinze Jr.? In the live-action version as well.
Does he do the voice for...
He does the voice for Kanan.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, so that's cool. I did not realize that. There you go. It's changed my whole...
Freddy's in the credits.
It's changed my whole view of Kanan now that I know that Freddie Prinze Jr. is doing it. I mean, not that it's a bad thing. It's just it's interesting. I was expecting someone old and wise to be Kanan. You know, Freddie Prinze Jr. I still think of from like his days as a teenage heartthrob kind of thing. So
perhaps he calls himself Freddie Prinze now because he became wise.
Because he's no longer... Freddie Prinze, the wise.
The wise.
With a name like Freddie Prinze, you know, how can you not be wise? Really?
Yeah, you have lost some sympathy points with such a name.
Cool. So, all right. So that's Rogue One. What do you think about the reveal for the name for episode 8?
It's a great name. And I want... What I'd like to know is how many people bash their heads together to come up with the name, or if it was, you know, the first thing, The Last Jedi. Let's call it The Last Jedi, because it could mean anything. Jedi is the plural of Jedi.
Yeah.
Is it Luke?
Yeah, exactly.
Or who is it?
So it's It could either be super profound, or it could just be something they're like, we need to come up with a name. Just give it that. Let's just roll with it. Yeah. Which in itself, I guess, is the genius of the name. So yeah. The name is Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Yeah, yeah. And so we don't know whether that's a singular Jedi or a plural Jedi.
And they changed the color of the Star Wars font from yellow to red.
Mm-hmm. The Sith color.
I mean, it could just be a design choice, but you know, we're...
But is anything done unintentionally? Could it be that maybe the graphic designer was colorblind and just chose the wrong color on the color picker, you know?
It would be amazing.
That's a massive misdirect. Yeah, I mean, so the way it was revealed was a red Star Wars with the Last Jedi in between the star and the wars, right? So I don't know what that means in terms of the fight between good and evil. It could be a shift. So usually the second movie in the two trilogies was Empire Strikes Back.
Attack of the Clones?
Attack of the Clones, right? So they were both kind of like, I guess, the Empire or the big bad making its push. And so can we expect something like that now? So whatever this, what's the new Empire called?
The First Order.
The First Order. So it's the First Order making its push, potentially.
I mean, it's the most possible solution because the New Republic got wiped out in Episode 7. There should be some remaining forces, and the Resistance is only a ragtag group because it can't be officially funded by the New Republic because of a peace treaty they had with the First Order, blah blah blah. So I guess it's gonna be the big push. Yeah.
That's interesting. And who are the remaining Jedi at this stage in the universe? So we only know of Luke. Yeah. We don't know of anyone else, right?
Potentially Rey. Perhaps some other survivors from his school. Perhaps there were others. They kept that pretty unexplained.
Yeah.
The whole thing with his school and Kylo Ren rebelling.
Yeah. There could be other students.
Students, yeah.
But we don't know what happened, right?
Yeah.
As in, like, Kylo Ren apparently killed a whole bunch of people when he kind of lost it, when he lost his mind. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, do you think that John Boyega's character would become a Jedi as well? Finn?
Well, with... it would be neat, and with... how was he called? Chirrut Imwe? Donnie Yen in Rogue One, we've seen that there are people who are perhaps force sensitive, but no actual Jedi. And it would be neat if at least they gave him a lightsaber, you know, democratized lightsabers for everybody.
Maybe that's what it's like Oprah shows up. She's like, you get a lightsaber and you get a lightsaber. Lightsabers for everyone.
And that actually happens in the Marvel Star Wars comic in the second or third arc. Yeah, they find a warehouse with lightsabers, and Han, Chewie and Leia each get a lightsaber.
You know, the problem with that, right, is that lightsabers being the equivalent of swords, if you don't know what you're doing, you can chop your hand off.
Yep.
So I think lightsabers should come with a level of training, like a minimum requirement.
You could potentially kill yourself by just looking into the emitter, you know?
Yeah.
You don't know if it's a lightsaber. What is that?
Take your eye out. Exactly. Put a hole in your head is what would happen. It wouldn't even take your eye out. It would just punch right through. That's just making me queasy now. So, I mean, it's an interesting one. I'm obviously very excited to see where they go with it and what it all means. I hope that it's not that they don't kind of like jump the shark and like just bring out like all these random Jedi that didn't exist before and were in hiding the whole time, you know?
Yeah, that would be a detriment. But perhaps, you know, Luke, and that's a theory, if Luke hit Rey on Jakku, perhaps he has hidden other young students as well, and now they go out on a road trip through the known galaxy, recruiting,
get the band back together
yeah. the Blues Brothers in space.
Yeah. Do you think that is something Luke would have done, is like hidden kids around the place? Or do you think he only hid Rey because of he has a special connection to her, i.e. he's her father?
You know, that would be the best explanation for it.
That he's I'm your daddy. I mean, maybe it's like the second episode in the new series, right? So he needs to say at some point, I am your father. You know?
Really? No, I just wanted to practice that line. I heard that line in a very stressful moment.
Yeah. I need to work through my own catharsis and let you know that I am your father. Join me.
Yeah. And together we could rule a galaxy as father.
You know, there's a great symmetry there, like, join me on the light side and together we will liberate the universe from the oppression of the, you know.
That would be amazing if they mirror that scene.
Yeah, they just need to find another platform to walk on.
Yeah, Bespin is probably still operational. Luke just goes there.
Yeah, no, it
meets old like, Lando and says, hey, we have to borrow your platform there. Ray, yeah, you well, go over there. I stay here.
He's already on the Iron Islands, right? So he just needs to find a swing bridge. So I just put Game of Thrones throw in there. So a swing bridge, like in Pike in Game of Thrones, you know, and they need to be on the swing bridge. And that's when he tells her that whole line.
Now, stretch out your hand. Yeah. What are you doing? I'm your dad.
Oops.
No.
Don't worry. We're very good with robotic prosthesis these days. It's fine.
It's no biggie.
Yeah.
And the medical droid walks out behind you.
Here's one I prepared earlier. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, so I think, you know, probably not much more to say about that rather than speculation, because that's all they revealed, right? Just the Last Jedi. So we can speculate all we want, but we just got to wait for the first trailer or some more leaked news. But Star Wars does a very good job of keeping things secret. You know, the level of control about leaks they have is pretty good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Compared to some... Yeah, because they shoot everything on a soundstage, right? So it's much easier to... like, they aren't doing live-action recording in the streets of Detroit or anything. So it's,
no, but
it's much...
They shot something down in Croatia, and they built drone-killing drones to keep... Well... drones out of the vicinity.
All right, so they built a drone killer for paparazzi drones, effectively.
Yeah,
that is so Star Wars, though. That is almost like with drone and drone war. That is great. I wonder if their drones actually look like the Imperial drones from from like Rogue One. You know, the ones that come down and like search for things. That's so cool.
Just imagine standing there, sending your own drone out with the remote control, and then you hear the. You know, the drones are there. I would shit myself and just run away.
It's the Empire, run!
Like an extra, the Chewie costume rocks up behind you and starts to shoot the Disney drone. What's going on? You know, I'm scarred for life here.
It's like my life has turned into Star Wars. I mean, we live in a post-reality world anyway, so anything could happen.
Everything could happen.
All right, cool. So, should we wrap up the Star Wars thing and move on to?
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about Split?
Yeah.
Everyone else is talking about Split, so we put it on the list because we wanted to address it.
Yeah, well, I love banana splits. Really tasty thing. The movie Split, I'm not sure about, because I heard a lot of people who I trust with their opinion in movies are telling me that. It's great to see James McAvoy. Is it
James McAvoy? Yeah,
McAvoy portray the role of the multiple personality disorder bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But the twist at the end that we won't spoil.
Yeah,
we won't spoil it. Doesn't justify the good reviews or the good press the movie actually gets. It's a colleague told me it's a ballsy move to do that, and he respects M. Night Shyamalan for doing so. But it doesn't justify the good press the movie gets.
Yeah. I heard as well. I refuse to watch it because I protest any M. Night Shyamalan movie because he destroyed Avatar, The Last Airbender. So I refuse to watch any of his movies anymore. And every other movie aside from The Sixth Sense that I've watched has just been a waste of time. So I'm expecting the same from this one. I think I've heard that it's getting pretty mediocre reviews for the movie itself, but everyone's really excited by the twist ending.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not enough to warrant me going out and actually spending money to watch this movie. I'm going to not watch it and rather spend my time doing other things. I think James McAvoy's performance looks good just from the trailers. Looks like, you know, there's a lot of... it looks quite innovative, actually, like just to see the different personality types and the way he's put it together. But at the same time, I'd rather see James McAvoy do something better after this and learn from this movie experience and be able to bring us a better performance next time rather than, I'm not going to see what he actually does in this movie unless it's like on a plane or something. So, yeah, that's what we want to say about Split. So that's pretty much all we had to say at this
point.
It's a protest. It's a protest that we're not going to watch it because of, well, for me personally, because he destroyed The Last Airbender. M. Night Shyamalan.
I've forgotten that he did the Last Airbender movie.
Oh, because, yeah, we did a pretty good job to repress that movie out of our minds.
Yeah.
I mean, the best animated TV show ever, and he goes and destroys it with one movie. It's the most tragic thing ever. So, all right. Any other movies on your radar at the moment? So I guess we can go through the trailers that have come out.
Let's do that.
All right. So the first one is the second Logan trailer. Have you had a chance to watch that yet?
I've watched it. And you know, it looks surprisingly good. I'm actually having hopes that Logan will make the other two Wolverine movies worthwhile, you know, like the twist in Split.
Yeah.
the last third justifies the first two.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it's not just the last third. You know, even with Rogue One, we talked about how the last third of the movie was like what actually made it. And with Split, everyone's talking about the end and how that kind of justified watching the movie for them. I hope that Wolverine is not just a last third type deal. I hope that the whole movie ends up being good because Wolverine really needs a solid win at this stage. Like,
I mean, the third in the sense of the trilogy. That the last movie justifies the other two being produced. You know, keep what's his face? Hugh Jackman in shape.
For
performance.
Yeah, I mean, the first couple of Wolverine movies were not. They were kind of. They were mediocre. They were adequate. You know, but this one needs to really pull it out of the park. Yeah. I think, you know, they've kind of like let the reins go at this stage. Maybe the studio has. It's an R-rated movie. So, you know, they've learned their lesson from Deadpool where they can potentially, be a bit more risky with the movies and push the envelope a bit more.
Yeah.
I hope that they use that to its full effect. And I don't mean, you know, just be more violent, but actually put together a movie that's not constrained by all of the studio notes and things like that, you know? Maybe not studio notes, but like studio requirements of what they think an X-Men / Wolverine movie should be. They should just let it be what it needs to be. I like the first trailer. I love the tone and the world that they kind of created in that far future. It looked like an art house movie. It looked like something you'd see out of a studio like A24, you know, which does like kind of more independent style envelope pushing movies. And I really like that, you know, using the Johnny Cash song Hurt, this the gravity and the seriousness with which they portrayed what was going on. The second trailer was much more action heavy, which is good because you want there to be action in the movie. But I hope that it's not just a slash fest, you know, with multiple sets of claws clawing people.
No, but I think the ingredients are there for having some good performances with Patrick Stewart, and also some human drama, because we don't know how I guess the kid is X-23, how she's related to Logan in this movie, and how she's related to Professor X, and what happened to the other X-Men, what led to Wolverine's conflicted all the time, but which conflict justifies his grumpy nature in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, because it's set, I mean, from what we understand, it's set in the future, right? So it's probably about, I think they said like 15 years or something after the events of the last X-Men movie. So it's already like a post-apocalyptic kind of future. We don't know what happened in between that and how things turned out where they are. Like Wolverine's effectively lost his healing factor or it's operating at a much more reduced level. So that's why, like in the trailer, you actually see scars on his body. When his healing factor was working, he wouldn't scar. So that's a great visual result of, you know, showing what that future looks like you know. And even Wolverine is not like a invincible kind of guy anymore. You know, he's got weaknesses that he needs to account for as he fights. He can't just rampage out there, just do whatever he wants anymore. To the human drama aspect, I think, you know, that's has to be, finally, they have to kind of make some sort of human drama aspect to these movies. I think the X-Men, the closest they came, you know, with the Magneto storyline and tying it to like World War II and the Holocaust and all that sort of stuff. Whereas with Wolverine, I think it'll be good if they can manage to make it a much smaller story, because he's effectively now a guy looking after and protecting this little girl, you know? And so you think about stories that have that kind of concept, you know, it's like a father-daughter relationship, games like The Last of Us. Like, there's a lot of emotional resonance that you can get out of that story. And I hope that they don't just turn the little girl, X-23, into like a mini version of him where they just have an excuse to go and have fights with this kid, you know? Because in the trailer, like, she can hold her own. And she's a bit out of control, I think.
Yeah, she learned well from Daddy or Guardian, whoever she is.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this last night. Like, it'll be cool, you know, if it was like a lone wolf and cub type situation where he's not just there fighting beside her and she's not just there fighting beside him, but it is like a father-child type relationship. And he's also trying to protect her. He's trying to, you know, not have her be witness to all of this violence that is happening, you know, even though she's potentially causing some of the violence. But he's still like, that would be cool if that was part of the tension. And so, you know, that's my hope, is that they can really play into those sorts of the human, more relatable angles of that story.
Yeah, it would be great if this gets if this makes it into the movie in some way, because I think, especially in Wolverine's case, we've seen in the comic books that his rather his violent and distanced behavior it protected him for a while, but he learned to open his heart, so to say, to his to the other X-Men, and make this human aspect an offensive quality instead of a weakness. He found strength in human relationships.
Exactly. it's a great end to the story arc, right? Because we know this is gonna be the last one, so we don't know what's gonna end up with him. But at the same time, he starts off being closed off, like his physical strength, but emotionally a bit repressed, you know?
Yeah.
And his display of power is always through his strength and his effective invincibility. Whereas it'll be cool to see that over time, he's kind of opened up, and now, you know, his strength, even though he's losing his physical strength and he's losing his physical invincibility, but emotionally, and kind of like he's found the missing half of who he is as a person.
So now,
you know, and that's what concludes the story. So like end to end, from the first X-Men movie to the end of Logan, we get that full arc, which would be pretty cool.
That would be neat. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been reading a book about screenwriting called Story by, I think it's Robert McKee. And he's going through effectively how to craft characters, how to craft stories, and how to put together a plot and all that sort of thing. And it's very much in line with thinking about the arc needs to be about how a character changes and develops over time. Because if the character doesn't change, if they just remain the same, you end up with Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
You know, which is just nothing is really happening except the last fight scene.
Yeah.
And so why did I spend 2 hours of my life watching this? Because nothing changed. Like, they could have started the movie at this point where they have the last fight scene in Batman v Superman, and it would have been exactly the same because the characters don't change for the last hour and a half anyway. Yeah. So, well, for the first hour and a half anyway. So, yeah, so hopefully Wolverine can really show that sense of progression and growth with the character Logan and his relationship with the world. Ah, that got so deep.
Probably too deep for the movie.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, are we expecting too much at this point? I don't know.
You know, somebody from the crew is listening and is thinking like, oh man, those guys are going to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's like just a big slash fest. Yes.
Half of the trailer isn't even in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Such is the way. They're probably going to like re-edit the whole thing to be something completely different, to make it more like Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Because that performed so well.
Yeah. All right, so Wonder Woman trailer. Did you manage to watch that one
yet? Yes, looked good. I'm, you know, it's a DC movie, so I'm, I don't want to get my hopes up too high.
Yeah.
Perhaps we'll see some change. The character and the whole production got enough trust from the fan base that it'll be a good movie. And I really hope we get a good Wonder Woman movie. But I'm going to reserve my judgment until I've actually seen it. I don't want to get too deep onto it.
So, I mean, I agree with you. We've been burned a few times with DC now, right? So the vision and the universe that they're constructing is defying all expectations for what we know of these characters and what we want them to be. I think Wonder Woman does look promising. The trailer looks great. Hopefully they're able to, what we were talking about with Logan, show a level of growth and progression with Diana, the character, over time and over the course of this movie. Because we've seen her already in Batman v Superman, and she was, to me, the most compelling part of that movie. It'll be good to see how she starts off as potentially like a naive princess type figure and then becomes the warrior who kind of leaves her home ground to find the greater world. You know, it's kind of that very, very, very hero's journey type of template. But hopefully through that process, they can actually bring some actual charm and character to Diana and not just make her like a static figure like they did with Superman, you know, because he just stays the same, like throughout from Man of Steel to the end of Batman v Superman, he's the same. He's just like, I'm here and I'm moody and broody, you know?
Yeah.
And nothing really changes. So hopefully they can tell a good story with Diana.
Yeah, I guess you get your, from what I've seen in the trailer, you'll get the hero's journey pretty early on, because I think part of the movie will be her witnessing the cruelties that go on in the world and you know, trying to push back the cruelty with more force and become the rather reclusive figure that she was in Dawn of Justice.
Yeah.
More operating in the shadows or learning to, that she has to operate with finesse to bring her adversaries down rather than just go out and punch them in the face.
Yeah, which in itself is a great commentary, right? Because it's a different approach to what we're seeing. Batman and Superman. So in the world that they've constructed, Batman and Superman, you really use the theatrics to, you know, they're bold, potentially violent figures of expressing power through violence and physical type prowess.
Yeah.
Whereas they've only been doing it for the last maybe 10, 20 years, whereas she's been there for the last, you know, 90 years.
Yes, yeah.
Operating in the shadows and providing a much more subtler type of power and influence rather than their head-on approach. So that's interesting already. So it's cool. It'll be cool to see how they sort of play that out and how they construct that in the Wonder Woman movie and set it up.
If that's even in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, again, we can hope. What I've seen of it also, to me, like, it's so much brighter and more colorful than Batman v Superman and Man of Steel. Like, the color palette just looks so, so cool. There's that scene where she's on the island in Themyscira looking out at the ocean, and it's just this beautiful blue water with the island sticking out. Like, I want that level of brilliance and like color saturation through the whole movie, because I'm tired of the DC movies looking so dark and depressing.
Yeah, I guess and in the World War One scenes, they clearly oversaturated the reds and blues of her costume, because everything is set in rather earthy tones that remind one of World War One documentaries or classic photos, and then she pops up from the on the front lines as this bright and colorful figure.
I mean, I've been playing Battlefield 1, so in the trenches it tends to be like, it's dark, it's muddy, it's gray, it's very depressing. So to contrast that with her brilliant colors in her uniform or her armor, right, would be really cool. It would be like a ray of light. It would be like a ray of light punching through the clouds.
Yeah.
So that would be pretty cool. And so there's some interesting visuals like that. Like, even the first time she sees a bullet, which is in the trailer, and they kind of like do the time slows down.
Slows down, yeah.
And she kind of like looks at the bullet and watches it come through, like realizing and recognizing for the first time what it is.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, there's some cool stuff in this. So hopefully, you know, the way Diana learns and interprets our world comes through in the movie as well. You know, and her judgments then on like how crazy this world is.
Exactly, yeah. To reflect a bit on how crazy the concept of war really is.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting, because I don't think I've ever read a Wonder Woman comic or even read a Justice League comic that's featured heavily on Wonder Woman. So most of my knowledge of her comes from mainly the animated series.
Yeah, it's the same here. I've only read the Grant Morrison did an Earth One graphic novel that came. Oh, I've said graphic novel, a long form comic book, right. Larger volume that came out last year. That was really good.
Right. Okay. So we're both going to be newbies. So we're going to be looking at this through kind of almost fresh eyes. So only filtered through what I've seen on Young Justice and the Justice League animated series. Cool. All right, so Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So what do you think of that?
It looks good. It looks like it'll gonna be a solid continuation of the first movie. With another adorable Groot incarnation,
yeah,
in his baby form this time. Let's see where this movie is headed. I believe we'll get more of the same on a grander scale.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy, even the first movie, they were kind of like the underdogs of the Marvel series, right? This looks to be a continuation of that, like you said, just a ragtag bunch. To me, I'm like, I want to see where it goes, but I'm not fully sold on it yet. because, I mean, I had problems with the first movie. Just from some basic physics, I think, that didn't quite work. So this looks good. Baby Groot and Rocket are the key things for me. Like that, I know that's going to be it's my favorite part of the trailer and might be my favorite part of the movie if they don't overuse it, because there's a tendency that they just have too much Baby Groot and it just is like, all right, enough of this now, you know.
Yeah, but then they're also bringing in new characters. Mantis is in this movie.
Oh, we didn't see Mantis in the trailer, did we?
Oh, she's the mind reader.
Oh,
at the end,
yes,
of the trailer.
The mind reader. Yes, you're right. See, even that scene, it felt a little bit forced to me.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just like, it feels like a kind of crappy joke.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I agree with you on that, but you know, it's
maybe
it's that crappy jokeness that made the first movie relatable for a wider audience. Yeah.
Maybe it was the B movie. It does. I mean, that's what I mean by they're kind of like the underdogs of the Marvel universe. You know, it's got a B movie feel about it. Maybe I'm generally not a massive B movie fan. Maybe that's why I'm like feeling like eh. But it does have a bit of a campy B movie quality to it, and I think maybe that's what I need to get over to enjoy Guardians properly.
Yeah, I think that was the aspect that made Guardians the hit that it is.
Yeah.
Or the franchise that it is.
And could be with the general public as well, that people are just maybe over the seriousness of series. Like, again, we're going to go to Batman v Superman, but that's like to the other extreme. That's like takes itself so seriously, you know, and almost without justification.
Yeah.
Whereas Guardians, I mean, the whole point, you know, they had a dance off with the bad guy. So you can tell what kind of movie it is. And I think you have to be like in that kind of not so much mindset, but if you know, it's such a breath of fresh air compared to the world that we live in right now as well, that maybe people, you know, really do respond and want to see that more.
Yeah.
Because we've got enough seriousness in the world as it is. That this is pure escapism.
Yeah.
So all right. So maybe I found a way to relate to Guardians just through this conversation. Because I don't know. I kind of like the more serious stuff. I'm the kind of person that can kind of appreciate where they were going with Batman v Superman, even though it was like from a story point of view stupid, and from a character point of view stupid. But I liked the darkness and the grittiness of that world.
The movie needed the darkness because it wasn't called Batman and Superman Best Buddies. But
yeah.
Even if you
hit
them
exactly
against each other, you can do it with style and finesse.
Yeah, which has been done before in the comics. So that was also why it was even more disappointing.
They could have just picked any Silver Age comic and have them, you know, do a bike race or something like that. It's enough material out there.
Yeah. But I mean, so that's the thing. I think Marvel is really playing an interesting game there, where they've got kind of even the Avengers. I mean, it tends to be serious, but they have a sense of levity and lightness to it. And with Guardians, they went even more light. So it'll be interesting. Is the Netflix series, is Marvel at its dark and gritty serious self? Like that's the serious version of the Marvel universe, you know. It's actually not in the movies, because I don't think any of the movies have been super serious that way, right?
No, I don't think so, because
I think Iron Man, some of the early like Iron Man 3,
yeah, but they turned around on the post-traumatic stress disorder stuff pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah.
It's still an underlying tone, but it's justifiable. It's not Tony's nature. You know?
Yeah. If time be stuck in that kind of rut. Yeah.
Yeah. He just gets you know, he just pulls more jokes if the situation gets too dire, because that's his way of coping with stress.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that was
it doesn't make it a better movie, but
Yeah, and I think, I mean, look, that's kind of the branding constraint that the Marvel movies have, you know, is they almost can't afford to have it too serious because they are trying to get that four quadrant, you know, try to appeal to everyone. So if they do go super dark, just like the DC movies, it's going to piss a lot of people off, and it's going to turn a lot of people off.
And as you said, people go to the cinema to get entertained. I mean, mainly you can, of course, there are good serious movies out there as well, but superheroes, you know, it's or in my opinion, superheroes have the it's their duty to cheer us up, so to say. That doesn't mean that you can't explore more darker themes with them, but always treat them respectfully. Don't over darken them.
I mean, I agree. Superheroes are supposed to give us hope.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we keep on coming back to DC. We don't have to over litigate this, but that's why, like, Superman in the DC movies don't give us hope.
Yeah.
He's not a hopeful figure. He's as lost. And so that's almost like, I think people don't want that, because if Superman's lost, where do the rest of us stand? You know, how can we have any hope if Superman himself, as Superman, doesn't have hope?
Because
he's supposed to be the eternal light. You know, he's supposed to be the one that's like, he's the figurehead of hope. You know, that's what he stands
for.
That's what the freaking symbol on his chest is supposed to stand for.
And he's the ultimate father figure, you know?
Yeah. You know, Christ-like, God-like figure kind of thing. So, so I mean, superhero movies, especially probably now more and more, are supposed to give us a sense of certainty in an uncertain world, give us hope in a place, in a time when it feels like a lot of things are under threat.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that's probably where Marvel's pitching itself. You know, I don't know, maybe consciously or unconsciously, but I think the market, so people are responding to movies that are more hopeful and are more kind of positive, and veering away from movies that are a little bit too serious, and movies that want to explore the gray zones, and the gritty dark realities, or the grittiness of dark reality, aren't doing so well. So maybe that's just where we are right now. So it'll be interesting to see, as we go forward, whether we can get more and more of those movies that can give us that escapism, so we can have a sense of certainty walking out rather than just more confusion. But why did Batman want to kill Superman? I don't get it. Anyway.
Because all right, he had to make sure. He has to be absolutely certain that he's not a threat. how did he say that? It was a great line of, I mean, Affleck delivered it perfectly, but it made no sense.
Because if there's only a 1% chance, then we have to take that as absolute certainty. God, that's what that's. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Not talking about the current administration. All right. Are we going to talk about Power Rangers? What's your one phrase review for the Power Rangers trailer?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. I think it looks as crazy and campy as I was expecting it to be. So,
I mean,
were you a Power Rangers fan? I mean, just for some background.
Of course, I was a Power Rangers fan back in the 90s, but now, you know, I watched the shows that the Power Rangers series are based on, which are the Japanese Super Sentai franchise. Mm-hmm. And I mean, those are 20 minute toy commercials, but sometimes they pack in great stories and character developments into there. You know, I've seen the Power Rangers trailer when I watched Rogue One.
Yeah.
It was in the cinemas, and, you know, people laughed. And I don't know, everybody's trying to hype up the movies, and I've looked at the toys and the costume reveals that were in the trailer. It just doesn't look good. And the fact that they got Bryan Cranston as Zordon just means that they had a big paycheck for him.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, what a fall from grace, I think, for Bryan Cranston.
No, it's, you know, if perhaps the movie will be something that surprises us, and it's a good 1.5 hours of entertainment. Could happen.
Yeah.
But from what I've seen in the trailers and how the monsters are designed and how the costumes are designed, I don't know. It feels like a cheap meal packed in an expensive package.
Yeah.
But like a McDonald's I like burger, that analogy. It looks great. But when you actually eat it, it's
like
junk food.
It's like when you open the box and there's a picture of the burger on the box, yeah. Right? And it's a beautiful looking burger on the box. But then you open the box and the burger inside is really like sad looking. You know?
Yeah, and the spit from the guy who prepared it runs out at the side of the bun or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it looks serviceable. The aesthetic is not something that appeals to me. If it looked like Pacific Rim, if it looked like that was the world that they'd created with the color tones and the contrast and saturation, like the quality of what the mech machines look like,
yeah,
I would potentially be interested in it. But it just looks like you said, like a really cheap, like a cheap meal, you know, like they didn't even do any, they didn't spend a lot of money on the effects, and they just kind of, yeah, that'll do. So,
I mean, that could work. That could play into the Power Rangers wheelhouse, you know, make it campy.
Yeah.
But as you said, that the mech designs, because it just came into my mind. It looks like Transformers. Confusing
too much
designs.
Like Transformers, yeah. Like there's nothing that really stands it out. I mean, the thing is, they're all kind of like combine, right?
Yeah.
As a part of the Power Rangers, but even that looked a bit cheap.
Yeah. You know, perhaps the human drama can straighten things out, because it feels like the group's comprised of outcasts and how they fit. Perhaps it could be a nice coming of age movie, you know?
I mean, I would think that, but the script comes, I mean, from what I've seen in the trailer, the script looks a bit, feels a bit silly as well. So I think it's going to be about like your average B grade action toy franchise,
yeah.
You know, so
it's sad.
I'm not expecting much.
I hope that it'll do something new, perhaps, you know, really make use of the franchise.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's Power Rangers. All right, so let's go on to the other movie news then. So we already talked about The Last Jedi, so we don't have to go to that one again. But we got some more DC news that they're rewriting The Flash.
Yeah.
Like, completely.
From scratch.
So.
Perhaps they're also growing a director in a lab somewhere.
In a pod somewhere. a director who can follow all of the Warner Brothers. So, I mean, last time we talked about that quote from, I can't remember who it was now, but they said working for Warner Brothers was like trying to fuck a porcupine.
Yeah, the exec, the, yeah.
It was the former Warner Brothers executive, because it was one prick against 100. great quote. I read that when I was like in high school and it stuck with me. But, you know, I think, you know, the DC movies are just plagued by that same problem. Going back to what we were saying about Wonder Woman as well. Hopefully Wonder Woman was conceived and left alone and can be produced as just this one thing without so many like fingers in
the honeypot
in the pie kind of thing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
so
we
can, because that's what happened with Suicide Squad, you know? It's like it was kind of like hacked to pieces and then reassembled to be this Frankenstein monster of a movie. Batman and Superman kind of went through all these iterations around what they should be and all these different voices involved. And it sounds like Flash is going through a similar thing. So the whole thing is just a mess. And it could be that there's just too many people involved and nobody can get a clear direction of what they want to do.
And then the Flash is a very hard character to put into a story onto his own. Because, you know, potentially the Flash could beat them all.
Yeah.
You have to give him a challenge. You have to define the power set.
Yeah. And I think a part of the challenge too for them is the TV show is already so popular.
Yeah.
And has already done a pretty good job at drawing the character in the public consciousness, right? Yeah. So how do they reframe Barry Allen and the story of Barry Allen in this universe? And make it unique and compelling enough to set it apart from what's happening in the TV show.
Yeah.
And not confuse people, because that's the other thing. They're like, I don't need to go to a Flash movie. It's on every week on the CW.
Yeah, you know? I don't need the origin again. And then,
yeah,
you know, it makes me wonder why they bother with solo movies when they could just pump out one Justice League movie after another.
Yeah, well...
Which could work also, just screw make ensemble movies only, like Justice League and Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
could work also. We know the origin stories.
I mean, that's what I hope with Spider-Man as well, that we don't have to re-go through watching Uncle Ben die one more time, you know. Yeah, but for most of the things, I think they can. I don't know. DC feels like they're rushing. It feels like they're running out of time, which is crazy because they're not. You know, nope. there's no finish line to this whole enterprise.
Clock.
You know,
yeah,
there's no clock exactly. So I don't see why they can't just slow down, take their time to build up the Justice League franchise, rather than just rush headlong into it. Like introducing all these characters in Batman v Superman via online video, you know, it was just stupid. Like, it was not needed.
Absolutely. No. If they introduce them as joining the fight, you know, Wonder Woman has already assembled her team and brings it to the party at the end, so to say. And she brings in the Flash and Cyborg and then Aquaman.
And it's not like we haven't had movies in the past where you've had an ensemble cast come together for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, you think of movies like, you know, it's old movies like The Magnificent Seven stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell a story where you introduce these characters. You don't have to go through every single detail of their origins, but you can still put together a compelling script and show character growth of time, right? Because that's what makes a good story. Whereas I think the way DC's doing it is they're just kind of like, they want to do everything at once and like at the same time, because it feels like they're in a rush to get to a destination. But at the same time, they're kind of like at the destination, which is the Justice League movie, but they haven't really started the race at the same time. So like, it's weird. They're in a quantum superposition where they're at every stage of telling the story at the same time. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just... And that's why everyone's confused and like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, but then you know, Warner Brothers has with Harry Potter ending, they don't have a big franchise that I'm aware of. So all they have going for them as a basic income generator are the DC movies, or they think are the DC movies.
Yeah, and that, I mean, like the. Sad part about it is Suicide Squad made a lot of money, and so I don't know if they've learned that lesson yet. And being Warner Brothers, again, there's just too many people involved, so there's no one bold vision that they're trying to get to, or one bold voice saying, "Hey guys, this is pretty shit. Let's just get our act together."
Yeah,
you know, is what it feels like. And then you were also saying that David Ayer wishes he had a time machine. So that's go back and redo Suicide Squad.
Is an amazing. That's an amazing thing to say as a director. I don't even know what his thought process was, because you know, you can say, okay, I regret certain things I've done with the movie I've not expressed a stronger opposition against certain decisions that were made above his head.
Yeah.
You know, just stand set up for a failure, so to say. It's that there's no shame if he said he did it for a paycheck, but at least he did what he could. That's not a problem. And if he admits that he wishes he would have done things better, that's great as well. But, you know, saying, oh, I wish I had a time machine so I could go back and redo stuff. What the fuck, man? That's just such a... I don't know. Clickbait journalism.
Good. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much it. I mean, we all wish David Ayer had a time machine, but apparently it's not going to happen. So, does that mean that there's going to be some sort of director's cut of Suicide Squad? Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't heard anything about that.
I haven't either, so I'm just wondering. Because they put out that extended version of Batman v Superman, right? So I wonder... Yeah. If there's going to be like the theatrical release of Suicide Squad, which was the one that was recut by the trailer editing company, and whether there's going to be a director's cut, which will be David Ayer's vision for what he wanted it to be.
But in defense of David Ayer, he also addressed that he said the Joker should have been the main villain in the movie instead of a shape-changing belly dancer. I think he put it in that way, and that at least he had, you know, he has an idea where he's gone. It's just,
yeah, the Joker was just superfluous to the plot. Like,
yeah,
I mean, plot very loosely used in the sense, but the Joker was wasted. I mean, as the debut of the Joker, it was completely wasted.
Wasted, yeah. And it's just, I'm so sorry. I've been too hard with my statement about him saying that, but David Ayer is not talentless. You know, he made he produced a watchable result. Even if he just did it for the paycheck, that's his job. You know, you do things for a paycheck, and I do things for a paycheck. It's okay to do things for a paycheck, and if they're bad, if we did bad things,
We should hold them to a greater standard.
okay. I'm sorry.
Otherwise, we end up like X3. You know, X-Men. That was a paycheck. Brett Ratner. My God. You know, I. You know, again, if we as fans of this material can't demand quality and respect from it, then. Well, you know, because it reflects badly on us. Because, like, the rest of our friends and family watch it, and they're like, what the hell is this crap that you like? And we're like, no, that is not the crap we like. That's a bad interpretation of the crap that we like.
We like
our crap's
crap.
Much better quality. I mean, yeah.
It's a bad interpretation.
We like quality crap, you know? And so I think, you know, that's kind of what frustrates it for me. And that's why when this whole thing, right, I've been reading comics for a long time, and when these movies started coming out, you want them to do good because it's a reflection on to me personally, it's a reflection on my interests as a hobby and like how people perceive that and how serious, you know, I want people to see what I see in them. And if they're just being, if there's just pulp and trash being put out there, then that's not what I see out of the material, you know, like all the stuff we talked about before, like Superman being seen as a form of hope and, comics and superhero stories telling us stories that give us a sense of certainty around about right and wrong in the world. That's what I see in it. And so that's, you know, which is probably why I'm coming from that place of wanting to see those things come out in the movies as well. And in stories like Suicide Squad that just hack those things to pieces. Yeah. It doesn't do anyone any good. You know?
Yeah. You're absolutely right on that one. Yeah. And it's definitely a missed opportunity on showing us another kind of superhero movie, you know, to say, okay, those villains have stories too, and as much thought as went into the heroes went into their foils.
Yeah. And I mean, Suicide Squad's a great opportunity to talk about what is a villain.
Yeah.
What makes a villain, the nature of good and evil, like you said, the humanity of the bad guy, you know? That would have been, Marvel's not doing that, and Fox is not doing that with the X-Men series. DC could have owned that corner of the market and defined what it is. Instead, they try to copy Deadpool's success, and they tried to, I don't know who else, what else they were trying to do, but they ended up with this massive movie that makes no sense.
Yeah.
The characters are not even drawn out. None of the characters, I mean, you know, aside from Deadshot, none of the characters even get like any sort of humanity in them. Like it's, they're all just random.
Yeah, not really.
Random caricatures of what characters should be.
And you know, Batman takes Deadshot down in an alley in front of his daughter.
Which yeah.
Every child which parents got shot in a dark corner somewhere certainly have in mind if they
Batman himself had his parents shot in a dark corner.
Yeah.
And he puts Deadshot and Deadshot's daughter in the same situation he was in that turned him into the Batman. Like that's like his number one trauma, you know? The fact that he would visit that upon someone else is just doesn't make it just shows you that like they just don't understand the characters. And I think that's a part of it. I think where Marvel potentially has an upper hand is that Kevin Feige and the team that they have are actually fans of the material and fans of the characters. Whereas DC maybe just sees it as a merchandising opportunity.
Yeah.
And they've just let Zack Snyder put his crazy fantasies using these characters. Yeah. You know, so I don't know. All right. We should stop going off against DC. we'll get branded as DC haters. Like I want them to do well so badly. That's like the archetypal characters. Like the DC characters are much more archetypal and much the Marvel characters are like effectively the B-list, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the fact that they're doing so well with those B-list characters just shows what a difference it makes when you know what your characters are about and what kind of stories you should be telling. Yeah. So
I want DC movies to be good.
Yeah.
I wish them all the best and I hope they get a chance to turn things around.
These are not the movies we need. These are definitely not the movies we deserve.
Very well said. Right. Very well said.
It's still like the Nolan Batman movies. It's still like, anyway. All right. Should we move on to TV then?
Let's move on. Small screen.
We'll try to wrap this up after the small scene section. So Legion. Legion's about to start. So what's Legion? You want to explain that one to us?
It's about... I don't know if he's the son of Charles Xavier in the series as well. It's about a mutant, which name... escaped me, who thinks he's mentally ill, but in fact absorbs the powers of other mutants, played in this series by Downton Abbey's Dave Stevens. And a trailer came out at Comic-Con and some trailers came out in the past months. And I'm not sure what to expect of the show, but they are really marketing the mental illness aspect of it all, that he's not quite sure if he's insane or if it's a byproduct of his mutant power. And
yeah, because you know, the whole thing is set in an asylum, right? Like it's in a mental hospital or something.
Yeah.
Right. It looks great. I mean, in the comics, he is the son of Charles Xavier. Kind of this. He's one of the most powerful mutants in.
I think he is the most powerful.
He's the number one. Yeah, but he's obviously not mentally stable. So, he's got multiple personality quirks, as well as being able to do crazy, super powerful things, but not be in full control of any of it.
Yeah.
So I think the show is going to be looks interesting. I don't know how they're going to play it out and how they're going to explain the character and sort of whether they're going to connect it to the movies and the Charles Xavier's that we know. But
I'm so stupid. The character's also called Legion.
Yeah, the character's name's Legion.
I completely forgot. I thought he was.
Mutant name is Legion.
Legion. Yeah, I thought he was. And now the other guy escaped me. The dude who has no jaw. Was just has a big flashlight instead of a jaw. Chamber. I confused him with Chamber.
Right. Chamber. So that's from Generation X. That's from the Generation X comics, right? Yeah, those are cool. I'd love to see a Generation X TV show as well.
Chamber would be a great visual thing.
Yeah, so Generation X was in the 90s, or late 90s?
Late 90s, yeah.
And it really, you know, they were the kids of that generation. It was kind of like the post-grunge, post-Nirvana kind of generation. I mean, literally Generation X kids, I guess you can say. Whereas now, I want to see an updated version of them as millennials. I think Generation Millennial X would be so cool. Which is going to bring me into Riverdale. But yeah, so Legion starts. When does it start?
In February. My phone just died, so...
you can't look it up? Okay, so we're expecting it to start in February. Definitely one to look out for. I'm going to be tuning into that one for sure. Again, I'm expecting, you know, I don't know what to expect, but I'm expecting it to be at least interesting. But Riverdale just came out. So Riverdale is based on the Archie comics characters of like Archie and Betty and Veronica, yeah. Jughead. Have you seen the trailer?
No, I haven't seen any trailer. I kept myself fresh for watching it, and it's even on Netflix. So
yeah, it's on Netflix outside of the US. In the US, it's actually on TV here, so you can watch it on demand. It's playing on the CW, which is the same channel, the same network that does like The Flash and Arrow. And those types of shows. So they're really carving a niche for themselves with these comic type.
Have you seen the first episode?
Yes. So I watched the first episode of Riverdale on demand. And I was intrigued. It's very much, I read Archie comics when I was a kid. I can't for the life of me remember any specific storylines of the Archie comics. I just remember that, you know, there was Archie and Jughead was his friend and Betty and Veronica were friends and there was probably some sort of teenage drama and angst in that whole thing. But I don't really know much more than that. Watching the show, I really liked how they put the first episode together. The story kind of unfolded in pieces. It's kind of like an onion, and I think that's kind of the premise of the show. There's a central mystery of a murder.
Okay.
Or, you know, somebody dies. And then they kind of introduce all the characters, and this murder has, or this person has died, and you don't know generally how it all fits together yet. But there are all these characters like Archie and Betty and Veronica and Jughead, and they're all kind of like circling each other in this small town and as a part of the high school. But we don't know how it all fits together just yet. And that's what I meant by it. It's intriguing for how they've started to construct this world. I'm going to give it, I think, at least another 3 or 4 episodes before you can draw judgment on whether it's good or not.
It sounds really interesting.
But it's definitely, yeah, it's almost, it feels like it's got a Twin Peaks kind of vibe to it. Okay. Like there's a lot of secrets that all these characters have. And it comes across as a little bit more deep and intriguing than I was expecting the show to be. Okay. The production quality and the cinematography is awesome. Like, I really like how it looks. So yeah, definitely check it out. I think it's one to watch.
Yeah, it's on my list, and I've just seen some photos from the first episode, and it looks really dark. And from what you say, it seems to have an edge to it.
It's dark, in a way, but it's also like it pays tribute to its Archie roots, because the characters have this facade, or this, you know, they tend to look like they're those very homely, small town kind of characters. And every now and again, they'll throw in a, "That's swell," you know, it's self-referential. It's making fun of itself. There's references in there to Archie having finally hit puberty, you know, like,
okay,
it's kind of like showing that the material has grown up, and this is a more kind of grown up version of what the comics were. But then again, I've not read the, you know, I can't remember the comics, so I don't know whether Archie had the same sort of problems in the comics as he's had in the show. But in the show, it's a bit more grown up than I was expecting it to be. Because I was, you know, I don't even know what I was expecting, but I was expecting it to be like, you know, let's go to the milk bar and have milkshakes and, you know, go to the high school dance and that sort of thing. Like very kind of like, I don't know, like 1960s type subject matter.
Yeah.
But this is, it's got that in there, but there's a layer of secrets and a layer of mystery that also makes things a lot more interesting.
Okay.
I don't know. Like it's, I think it's very finely constructed so far. So what I've seen so far and the way they've put it together, it's intriguing.
you made me really interested in watching that show.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be cool after you watch it. We should maybe after two or three episodes, which is probably where we'll get to
revisit
it,
the
next episode, do another review and just see what we think. Like it could. Yeah. I'm interested to hear your opinion.
Yeah.
It's an aesthetic that I really like. Like I quite like that's the style of aesthetic that I like. So we'll see whether, because I know your tastes are slightly different to mine, right? So we'll see how you feel about it.
Yeah, but you know what you've told me blew my mind, because I thought
oh no, now I've like raised expectations for this thing.
Yeah, but
like it's not going to be like a Truman Capote style.
I'm aware of that, but I thought, you know, with it being on the CW and me not really being a big fan of the CW DC shows. I mean, they're good and solid, but yeah, one episode of each show each season is enough to satisfy my cravings for Arrow and The Flash.
Yeah, to sort of get to know. Yeah. Well, we'll see how this one goes. I mean, again, it's only one episode and the story and the mystery is unfolding quite, and I'm not going to say slowly, because I think the pace is good, because it allows you to really digest what's going on. And I watched it. I mean, I didn't watch it in one sitting. I think I watched half of it, then I came back and watched the second half. Okay. And I felt that it was compelling. So, see what you think.
Okay.
For sure. Awesome. So aside from that, I mean, any other TV? So we mentioned Star Wars Rebels a little bit. Voltron. And there's a new Justice League Action show coming up. So what's that about?
Justice League Action is it's like 15 minute long episodes of the adventures of the Justice League. And, you know, they have the old crew back. Paul Dini has written a few episodes. Alan Burnett is producing the thing. And I think Butch Lukic came back as writer and director. And it's basically, it's the modern incarnations of the DC characters, of the wide roster of DC characters that we've already seen in the Justice League TV show, with cheaper animations and the first act of the episode taken out. So it's basically, they start with the action and the resolve and bring in a bit of character development. And I've seen like 15 episodes so far, and they're great. It's a really great show. I mean, you definitely see that the budget isn't as big as it was on Justice League Unlimited at Justice League.
Yeah,
but it feels like a contemporary continuation of that show. It became a bit more simple, but that doesn't mean that it's dumbed down. It's just for a younger audience.
Okay. So it's still enjoyable.
I mean,
just if you've got 15 minutes just to sort of, I'm expecting there's no overarching story, right? It's just adventures.
No, it's just adventures, but they bring in even more obscure characters, like Space Cabby is in the fourth episode with Mr. Mind as the villain, which is amazing. Right. And you got two consecutive episodes featuring Etrigan.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
Brother Demon and stuff. So they are really, and Firestorm is featured prominently, in the show.
Oh, which cool.
It's amazing. It's great. It's handled really, really well.
Yeah. Firestorm's a really cool character.
Yeah.
Is it the same? Is it, how many people in the Firestorm matrix in this?
It's two.
Just two?
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because I know they're also working on a Justice League Dark. So they're working on a version of like a Justice League Dark movie, which will have Etrigan and like the more darker characters.
Wasn't that the animated movie that came out last week or a week ago? Or is the live action version still a thing?
I think there's still a live action movie in the works. Yeah. Again, it's probably a development hell at this stage, depending on where it is with its development cycle. But I think the Justice League Dark animated movie was part of setting up see, you know, start sowing the seeds and putting these types of characters and testing them out and seeing how to work with them.
My God, if they do a live action Etrigan, I can't talk bad about that movie if I get the live action Etrigan.
I know. Can you imagine the level of groundwork they need to lay before they get to that stage, though? So Etrigan is a demon from like the medieval period, right?
Yeah, Jason Blood. He's a demon bonded to a guy called Jason Blood, and he gets bonded by him by Merlin.
Right, so Merlin from the King Arthur legend creates Etrigan by bonding this demon to Jason Blood. And when Etrigan talks, he always talks in like rhyming couplet.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine putting a character like that in the cinema right now? Like, people would be like, what the hell is this?
I don't care. It'll be like my second birthday.
Yeah, look, I want to see them do it, but again,
no, they can't do it.
They can choose to do it as a fully campy, just like a joke, or they can try to do it with some sense of seriousness. I'm obviously going to go for the seriousness angle, because that's what I like. But, I mean, can you do a Deadpool version of Etrigan? I mean, you very well could. I don't know. He's not... it's going to come across as those really bad... like Ghost Rider,
yeah,
you know, it's gonna have to set feel like one of those properly. Really bad, yeah,
or the whole thing.
And DC's, I mean, they've already, even with Suicide Squad, put in magic in the universe. Like, they've explained demons and they've talked about that stuff already. So again, it's like too much so soon. Like, Marvel's building up to magic over 18 years. DC puts it in the same year. You know, when they're trying to launch everything at the same time. Again, the quantum superposition of all their properties.
Yeah, the Etrigan wouldn't be the biggest problem in a Justice League Dark movie, but you have Satana, you have Swamp Thing, you have John Constantine. Phantom Stranger, you have so many.
It's funny in a movie, like you said, when Etrigan is not the not the most crazy character. You know?
I mean,
Swamp Thing shouldn't even be in it. I think I don't know.
No, and they could bring in the Spectre. I think I mentioned Deadman already.
Yeah, I mean, from what I heard in the Justice League Dark animated movie, Batman's only in there as kind of like a token, because you have to have Batman, right?
Yeah, so
he just kind of shows up. I haven't watched it yet, but I've read some reviews on it, so I will check that out soon. Cool. All right, cool. So that almost wraps up our TV session as well. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we fully wrap up?
Nope. We've worked through our list.
Cool. So I guess this is the last thing in closing. Just in memory of John Hurt, who passed away, I think 24 hours ago or 48 hours ago or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's quite sad.
You know, yeah, because... He gave me my first big jump scare in Alien, with Alien.
Yeah, playing Kane.
Yeah.
That was, I think for me, the iconic performances, I mean, was Alien for sure, that scene.
Yeah.
And also just the voice of John Hurt as the dragon in the Merlin TV show.
It's John Hurt, yeah, right.
Yeah. So I think it still sticks out as like, you know, if you're going to cast, if you're going to do a voice cast for a character that is both kind of like wise and powerful, but also vulnerable at the same time. I think it was just great voice casting there.
And so, he played John Merrick in the Elephant Man movie.
Yes.
The one, is it from Francis Ford Coppola?
I can't remember actually.
I'm not sure. And that was something that really struck a chord in my childhood, because, you know, I've seen this movie unattended, and it made me aware, that some people got a lot worse than mine in life.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So The Elephant Man was directed by David Lynch.
Ah, David Lynch, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't comparable. Yeah. So, and I think, again, it's that that immortal line, I am not an animal.
Yeah.
Which he cries out because, again, he was kind of like subjected to all of this kind of like mistreatment and kind of, people examined him as a scientific curiosity rather than a person.
Yeah,
I was going to say, in terms of having that empathy,
And until he got taken into hospital care, because from what I know of John Merrick's actual biography, he had the chance to, live a somewhat dignified life in the hospital.
Right. So maybe that should be the movie recommendation for a classic movie to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Rewatch The Elephant Man. Yeah. We should do that.
1980. And we can all use a little bit more empathy these days.
Yeah, these days, yeah.
For sure. What a way to close.
What a profound and deep.
I know. This show is normally not so profound and deep, but, we went there today.
Yeah, it's the theme for 2017, profound and deep.
Profound and deep. All right, we're going to make it happen. All right, cool. Well, it's been great hanging out with everyone for episode 1 of season 2 for Asteroids in Exile. And we will see you in a couple weeks. So we'll probably do a tweet or a post or something just to let you know before the episode's going to drop.
Yep.
For the next episode.
At least a week beforehand.
Then. At least a week before. So you can get ready. Get you excited.
Yeah, and hopefully we get a new version of the recording software we use, which enables us to live stream with the click of a button.
Ooh. Yeah, so what we're going to try some new things this year. We might update our logo, update the website, try some new live streaming things, effectively update everything.
I got a new haircut, so I'm already.
Hey, it's Chinese New Year. It's Year of the Rooster. You might as well update everything, right? Cool. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.
I'm guessing that in Austria, it's pretty much you have seasonal food, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So the menu was like, effectively, it was a very Austrian restaurant. So it was like, the sausage, the meat, the sauerkraut, that sort of thing. Whereas my friends are asking for like, mixed vegetables and stuff like that. And he's like, well,
get out of my restaurant.
He's kind of like, there are no vegetables. It's like, is like the sauerkraut is the vegetable.